I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Let's get moving with Maria. Inspiration to spend a few minutes each day to get moving on the small things that can make a big difference in your life.
With me today, Danielle Forbes, hypertension specialist with HEAL program at the Utah Department of Health, and Dr. Barry Stoltz. He's a professor of medicine at the University of Utah Medical Center and a consultant for the Department of Health and Human Services. And thanks to both of you for being with me today.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Maria, for having us.
I've asked you to be here today because we're looking at a new study that was published by the American Heart Association that made kind of a slight link to napping and hypertension. So I wanted to talk about the study for just a minute and maybe dispel any myths or talk exactly what the study was focusing on that may not pertain to all of us. So maybe Dr. Stoltz, you could start out. You took a look at this study and tell me what you think.
Well, maybe let me put a little bit of perspective on this first, if that's okay. I think the first thing that our listeners would want to know is that we have a new definition of hypertension over the last several years. Hypertension is now defined as an accurately, and I emphasize accurately measured blood pressure of 130 over 80 or higher. And that has to be confirmed by an accurately measured, and I again emphasize accurately measured out-of-office blood pressure. And so that's what everybody in the public needs to remember. By this definition, 50% of adult Americans are now defined as having hypertension. That's a huge number. Hypertension has multiple causative factors, and they include, among others, advancing age, overweight and obesity, increased diet sodium, low diet potassium, and genetic susceptibilities. And the importance of those individual factors varies from one person to another. But over the last 30 to 40 years, it's also been demonstrated that some pathologic disorders of sleep, which lead to excessive daytime sleepiness, such as obstructive sleep apnea, narcolepsy, insomnia, these factors also increase the risk of developing hypertension and cardiovascular disease. More recently, in the last 10 to 15 years, there have been epidemiologic observational studies of how sleep duration, especially too little sleep and possibly too much sleep, might affect blood pressure and the development of hypertension. So this current study about nap frequency and hypertension does not represent a new concept or a new finding. There have been multiple earlier studies that have investigated sleep duration and hypertension, including napping.
So this study almost vilified napping because it kind of made a link between napping and hypertension. So maybe, Danielle, what would you say the bottom line is for folks that are listening that maybe take frequent naps?
I think the biggest takeaway for folks who do take multiple naps or frequent naps throughout the week or, you know, maybe a couple a day, the biggest takeaway is there's probably an underlying issue as far as why you're needing to take the naps. And I think an important thing to realize is that you need to get enough sleep, which is recommended to be 7 hours a night, in order to be able to function and, you know, not feel so tired the next day or throughout the day in general. And so if you're needing to take naps, I think it's important to, you know, maybe check in with yourself and also check in with your physician and share this concern so that you can maybe start to look at an underlying issue, which could be the insomnia that Dr. Stoltz had mentioned or other sleep conditions, but it also could be stress as a factor. Stress can impact many different aspects of your life. And I think it's important to realize that you need to make sure that you're just ultimately getting enough sleep, trying to stay stress-free, and really just focusing on your overall health.
Right. But Dr. Stoltz, we don't want to vilify naps. If you need a nap, it's not going to hurt your health to take a nap.
I would say that that is the most likely scenario here. My message would be, know your blood pressure for sure. And if you are having excessive daytime sleepiness and it requires you to take a nap, just as Danielle said, see your provider, your clinician.
Let's talk for a second about stress, because throughout the pandemic, I've heard people talk about how they are mentally exhausted. Could that be leading people also to need to maybe take more naps?
I think if stress is affecting your sleep, then it's going to make you sleepier during the day and you're going to have to take a nap. But I don't think we have evidence to tell people stop taking naps because it's going to make your blood pressure go up. I don't think that would be the situation here.
Okay, so let's turn it around just a little bit. If people are taking, you know, one or two naps a day, should they be looking at maybe there are some underlying factors? I mean, is this something that should be assigned to them that maybe something else is going on?
Yes. I think if you're having to take a lot of naps, there may be a message there. And again, I think the messages that we like to pass is know your blood pressure, see your clinician.
Know your blood pressure. I'm going to be honest right now. I don't know my blood pressure. What is the best way for people to simply do this if they aren't going to have a physical, say, in the near future? Maybe, Danielle, you could address that.
There are many ways that you can make sure you're getting an accurate reading. The best would be to obviously go to your primary care provider, but there's also blood pressure cuffs available in pharmacies. You can also purchase one on your own to take your own blood pressure that way. So there's different options, but the best way to get the most accurate would be to go to your primary care.
Dr. Stoltz, what would be some other things that are precursors to hypertension or high blood pressure that people should be aware of, not just maybe whether they need to take a nap or not?
Yeah, I think the key things are kind of like we mentioned before. I think if people are advancing in age, if people are overweight or obese, if people have too much sodium in their diet or too little potassium in their diet, and potassium is basically fruits and vegetables, or they have genetic susceptibility to hypertension in that one or both parents or a sib, brother or sister, has hypertension, that increases your need to know your blood pressure. I would say that I agree with Danielle. It is reasonable to measure your blood pressure at home, but you have to remember a couple of things. The majority of blood pressure cuffs on the market have not been validated for accuracy, and many are inaccurate. The American Medical Association has a list on their website of validated home blood pressure devices that can be used. Second, the techniques of measuring your home blood pressure have to be done very accurately, or the home blood pressure measurements are likely to be falsely high. So again, Danielle's emphasis, see your clinician, is always the best advice that there is.
Do most people who have high blood pressure know that they have high blood pressure?
No, we know from the studies that have been done from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey that's done every 2 years in the United States, we know that probably 30% of hypertensive Americans are not aware that they have hypertension. And since the definition of hypertension has decreased from 140/90 millimeters of mercury or higher to 130 over 80 millimeters of mercury or higher, that number is probably more along the lines of 40% of hypertensive Americans don't know that they have hypertension.
What is the first step once somebody has realized that they fall into this category? What should be the first thing that they do to try to reduce this problem?
I think the first thing to do once you realize that you do have high blood pressure is to look at lifestyle factors and lifestyle changes that you can make before going on to medication or anything like that. Obviously, you need to consult with your physician and make a plan that way. But I think that looking at your diet and making sure that you're getting enough healthy foods, so the fruits and vegetables, and also making sure that you're not having foods with high sodium or high salt contents. And then also making sure that, you know, you're getting up and moving each day. It's recommended to do about 30 minutes a day. And that could be just simply going for a walk or, you know, hitting the gym, going for a bike ride. And then again, also making sure to look at your stress and trying to reduce stress levels.
Dr. Stoltz, what would you add?
I guess what I would add is lifestyle changes are very important. They're often not adequate in themselves for many patients. And so seeing your clinician, deciding on where your cardiovascular risk is, and then for many patients who are already at higher cardiovascular risk, we start lifestyle and pharmacologic drug therapy at the same time. For patients at very low cardiovascular risk, it may be very reasonable to try lifestyle modification for a period of 3 to 6 months. But if you're still hypertensive after 3 to 6 months of lifestyle change, even those low-risk patients should be strongly considered for antihypertensive therapy.
What are the effects if they don't get that therapy?
Well, hypertension is the leading risk factor globally for mortality. It is the leading risk factor globally for cardiovascular disease. And to have basically 50% of Americans hypertensive, we are basically putting 50% of Americans at substantial risk if their blood pressure is not controlled.
When we talk about exercise, it seems a lot easier to measure than diet. I think we can all say, oh, I'm going to eat better, but I'm not sure that people understand what is the best diet for them. I mean, they know they shouldn't be eating a lot of sugar and they shouldn't be eating a lot of fats, but really, what is a healthy diet beyond that?
So a healthy diet beyond that is, as Danielle has said, low in sodium and high in potassium. 80% of diet sodium is not what you add to cooking or what you add at the table. It's what is already in the processed food that you buy from the grocery store. So reading labels to figure out how much sodium is there and trying to limit your sodium to 2.3 grams per day or less is very important. Trying to get 6 to 8 servings of fruits and vegetables each day to get enough potassium, or at least 3 servings of fruits and vegetables per day, will absolutely lower your blood pressure. Exercise has many, many benefits, but exercise benefits on blood pressure are less than the benefits of a good, healthy diet.
And then there's the big one, or probably for a lot of us, the most difficult, and that would be stress. How do we go about, maybe Danielle, you could take a look at this one. What do you think are the best ways for us to maybe reduce our stress levels?
Yeah, I think many Americans tend to have higher stress levels just due to family, job, outside lifestyle impacts. So I think that if you're working and you're starting to notice that like your stress level might be rising, it's a good time to take a break, you know, get away from your computer, get away from work if you can for about 10 minutes, just try and cool yourself off a little bit. And I think family and like lifestyle impacts also, those can be much more difficult to manage just because like income can be a huge stress factor. And with inflation and everything, many Americans are stressed out and worrying financially. So I think that, you know, creating a budget in that instance would be a good thing to set in stone and follow. But there's some modifiable and changeable areas that can impact stress, but then also some that can't be managed and, you know, changed as easily. So just making sure that you're monitoring your stress and overall trying to improve that is the best way.
Dr. Stahls, what have you seen during the pandemic when it comes to people and hypertension?
Well, there are several studies that have been published about this very issue. And the suggestion or the findings in those studies, which are kind of preliminary studies, are that hypertension control rates decreased a little bit during the pandemic. How much of that is due to not seeing your clinician and how much might be due to the stress that Danielle has described, I don't think any of us know for sure. But during the pandemic, hypertension control rates diminished some.
Okay. Anything that you would like to add, Dr. Stahls, to what Danielle was saying about things that people can do to reduce their stress level?
I think that's a tough question. I think that's going to be one that is going to be highly variable from one person to another, depending on those sources of stress. And again, where I come from is see your clinician, know your blood pressure, talk about that stress.
What other helpful advice can we give to folks?
I think some other helpful pieces of advice that we can give to people as far as, you know, making sure to know your blood pressure, manage your hypertension and your high blood pressure. There's also some other factors that we have not mentioned, such as smoking and excessive drinking. Those can all impact hypertension as well. So, you know, trying to cut back or completely stop smoking would be the best. And also reducing the amount of alcohol that you consume would be other great things that you can do. But I think overall, it's just making sure you know your blood pressure, you're talking to your doctor, and you're also eating healthy and exercising.
Dr. Stahls, any final comments before we wrap up?
No, I think the key thing is that everybody needs to know that hypertension is the leading global risk factor for mortality, for dying, and for cardiovascular disease. And you absolutely have to know that blood pressure.
And Danielle, is there a place people can go for more resources about hypertension?
Yes. The one we most commonly refer out to is just the American Heart Association. They have so many great educational infographics, just overall information. So I think that would be the best website or, you know, place to go. There's also the CDC and others, but the American Heart is specifically focused on heart health and hypertension.
All right. Thank you to both of you for being here today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Maria.
Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are. And this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.